So our first speaker today is Jonas Prising. Mr. Prising was named Executive Vice President and President of the Americas of the Manpower Group, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in 2008. His responsibilities include all aspects of Manpower's $3.8 billion business in North America, Central America, and South America. Includes nearly 1,000 field offices that employ more than 500,000 permanent, temporary, and contract employees. He joined Manpower in 1999. He's served as Director of Manpower Global Accounts in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. He's also been Managing Director of Manpower Italy, where he increased revenues by more than 50%. Before joining Manpower, he worked 10 years for Electrolux, a Swedish multinational. So he's a recognized expert in labor market trends, in diversity, and in workforce development. He's a frequent speaker at conferences and a commentator on national and international media. So if he looks familiar to you, you may have seen him interviewed on CNBC or Fox News. He speaks five languages, and he's very committed to working with junior achievement in Wisconsin, in the USA, and also globally. On a personal level, he tells me that during our Wisconsin winters, he's an enthusiastic hockey player, and during the summer, he's an avid road biker. He logs in many miles on his Trek bicycle, which was made in Waterloo, Wisconsin. So his talk today is the changing world of work and its impact on jobs in the future.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. Thank you for that introduction, and thank you for inviting me here this morning. I am delighted to be here. And I'm glad that you pointed out that I'm an enthusiastic hockey player, which is different from a good hockey player. I'm, of course, very pleased to be here also as a Wisconsin-based company, which was founded in Milwaukee 65 years ago, and further then expanded over the years so that today we're a global company. We're a Fortune 500 company. We have operations in 83 countries. And we are happily headquartered with our global headquarters in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And from our base and our viewpoint on the markets, on the labor trends that we are seeing globally, I will try to illustrate some thoughts and observations that we have on global forces that are shaping the labor markets at large in the world, but more specifically also here in the US, and when I can also in Wisconsin. Look at some of the world of work trends that we are seeing emerging and talk about the implications those trends have for the future jobs here in Wisconsin as well as in the US or anywhere else that you'd be interested in discussing. The time that we are faced with today is truly interesting from a labor market and from a world of work perspective. There are many forces and trends that are coming together roughly at the same time. Some of these have been going on for many years, for decades. Some of them are relatively recent. Some are structural and some are cyclical. So sometimes as we look at the labor markets and we don't understand why we have things such as jobless recoveries or less job recoveries, we attribute those to primarily cyclical cycles. Whereas, in fact, many of them are structural and have been in the works for many, many years. We call this confluence of trends and forces the human age. And as Manpower Group, we are seeing the importance of talent to the success of companies and organizations, as well as countries and states alike, be the critical component of success for the future. So access to talent is what determines the success of organizations as well as countries. And we are, on a global basis as well as on an individual company basis, seeing an increased realization that this is true. And I mentioned earlier the Manpower Group, and this is not so much to talk about and have a commercial for the Manpower Group. It is more an illustration of how we come to these insights and why we make the conclusions we do. As the Manpower Group, we encounter roughly 12 million job seekers a year. We employ roughly 4.5 million people across the world. Here in the United States, we employ about 400,000 people every year. In Wisconsin, we would employ close to 11,000 people every year. So we see job seekers who wish to enter the workforce. We see employers, close to 500,000 employers globally, looking for talent as they wish to grow their business and find the talent so that they can be successful. We see lower skills, so those with or without high school degrees, as well as those with professional skills, because we operate through our Experis brand in the professional skills arena. We also, through our Right Management business, help relocate employees that are displaced through reductions in force, so career transition or outplacement services. So we know what it's like for people to leave organizations and how long it takes them to get in. And of course, we take this knowledge and this data, and we share this with our clients, organizations, the community at large, and of course also we forge our own corporate strategies around those trends and forces that we are observing. And I would like to talk a little bit now about those forces that we see occurring, as well as then the world of work trends that are happening. So many of you will know and will be familiar with some of the global forces that are in play today. You have the global readjustment, which is what we call this very clear acceleration of emerging markets versus developed markets. So how emerging markets are taking a preeminent role, their growth rates are higher, their birth rates are much higher than the developed world, so their demographics are sounder, their investments in education are significant. They compete very rapidly in a global economy. So the time that it took us to move from an agrarian society to an industrial society to a service-based economy, which by and large for the developed world was roughly done in the time span of maybe 70 years, is compressed to about 30 years. If you recall the talks and the stories around the difficulties for Latin America for many, many years, Latin America moved very quickly from a very sound and productive agrarian society to a service-based economy, skipping a big part of the manufacturing and industrial production era, which is very difficult to do in terms of creating broad-based wealth. So this adjustment and the acceleration of emerging markets, the slowing down of developed markets, is something that has been, of course, clear for a number of times, but after the recession, the recent recession, you really see this come to the fore. And you saw those emerging markets navigate the recession in a much, much better way than the countries in the developed world. And this is a trend and a force that will continue to accelerate based on population. As a whole, predominant economies principally thrive based on population growth. Population growth drives economic growth. Some of that can be made up through productivity improvements, but as you will see, it is very difficult to compete with very vast populations that are creating a domestic market as well as an external export market as well. So that is a force that many of you recognize. The trend of social bifurcation is alive and well, not only in developed markets, but also in emerging markets. So the gap between the haves and the have-nots is increasing in emerging markets, but also very prevalent and visible in developed markets. So this gap, which has been occurring for maybe 10, 15 years, is accelerating and not shrinking. This is true for countries in Europe. It is very true for us here in the United States. But surprisingly, it's also true in emerging markets. There is a shift, of course, out of poverty for some of those emerging markets into consumer markets that are able to sustain domestic consumption growth at a rapid and accelerated rate, yet the growth of the wealth is heavily skewed towards a small part of the population. So this is a trend that has been established for and has been going on for quite some time and is accelerating as well. It's not converging. It is going further apart. A lot of this accelerated bifurcation is based on education, and I'll come back to that in a little while. Technology is, of course, an accelerator, and I like to think about technology not so much in terms of all the new things that happen, so innovation. Yes, innovation will occur, but innovation has occurred in human history all along as we have gone on. So I don't think that the biggest impact that technology has in our age is the fact that new things happen and we have new toys and new ways of doing things. The big difference is the speed with which change occurs. And the big change that can affect, for instance, around demographics, how birth rates fall much, much faster in emerging markets than they've done anywhere else, how China is racing to become rich before it grows old, because average lifespans are increasing at twice to three times the rate they used to do for us. As we grew rich while we grew old from a population perspective over 80 years, it is compressed over 30 years in many cases. So technology, think of technology not as much as the bringer of new things, but rather as in terms of a force, an accelerator of change, which means different pressures for economies and organizations alike. And you are seeing some of those effects, for instance, through less job recoveries, as companies are able to and organizations are able to do more with less. Certainly there's innovation, but the innovation essentially means companies have to be very agile and quick at adjusting and doing things in a different way. So these are some of the global forces that you would recognize at large. And I'm sure that you have thought about them and that you have observed them over time. When it comes to world of work trends, we clearly identify four trends that we see occurring that have been going on for some time, but we believe will become increasingly important as time goes on. I would like to delve deeper into the technology aspect and especially the demographics aspect, which I think is most relevant for us here in this room, but also briefly touch on some of the other ones. The rise of customer sophistication, and in this case you could really talk about organizational sophistication, is fundamentally changing the way organizations behave when they think about jobs and work and how work gets done. More technology is accessible to more countries globally, which means you can do work in very different ways. The constant drive for do more with less or do the same with less is relentless and will only increase. The effects of that you are seeing in productivity improvements. And we can talk a little bit more about that later on, but manufacturing employment in the United States has dropped by a third over the last decade. Yet manufacturing output over the same decade, while losing 30% of the workforce, so going down from 17% to about 11%, which is where we are today, is off the charts. We have the best productivity in manufacturing of anybody, to the point that productivity in manufacturing will compensate for wage inflation in some emerging markets, and we as a nation will be competitive within manufacturing against China in the next 5 to 6 years. It is an effect of doing more with less, applying the technology that exists. It is a very strong trend, and it is only going to continue. When you think about individual choice, this is the first time in the workforce where you have four generations at work. You have the boomers, and you end with the Generation X. Now, what does that mean? The last generation that we have in terms of attitudes and thoughts around the workforce is very different to the baby boomer generation. When we at Manpower Group started doing surveys for job entrants and asked them how many times they were expecting to change employer 30 years ago, they would say twice, maybe three times, is when I intend to change employer. The young people that come into the workforce today fully expect to change jobs 10 to 15 times. This covenant, this change, the structural change in terms of very rapid cycles of job changes may accelerate it after the 81-82 recession. So that is when we believe, if you look at the data, that is when we started to see a lot of changes. It's the first time that companies reacted to a recession in a different way than they had done in the past. If you think how companies used to react to recessions, they used to absorb the loss in demand by reducing the workforce somewhat, but absorbing roughly 70% of the productivity loss as a company. So when companies went into recessions, they knew this was going to be tough. They also knew it was going to be pretty short. So they held on to their workforce, reduced the workforce somewhat, and then waited for the recession to end and to come out of the recession. So fast forward to the 2008 recession. Out of the productivity losses that companies suffered, more than 90% of that loss was borne by the workforce, which is why you saw such an immediate and rapid decline in employment and rapid rise in unemployment virtually overnight. Companies are more sophisticated, know where their workforces are. Just-in-time manufacturing and just-in-time visibility means they can react instantly. And you're seeing that all the time. You saw it in 2008. You are seeing that also today, where increased uncertainty means that people pull back. You see some of the trends around changing workforces and bringing them down and being more conservative. It happens instantly. There is no more a time lag of 6 months, which is what there used to be. So companies are moving in a very different way. This affects the workers who no longer expect lifetime employment. And their focus becomes on their ability to become marketable and have the education so that they are able to move between employers or move within a company and change jobs. We talked earlier about technology's role as an accelerator of change. In the world of work, for the most part, the role technology plays is, of course, access to information so that companies know where they are and what is happening on a just-in-time basis, and they make very rapid adjustments based on that, but also the way work gets done. So work can now get done remotely. You can do things on a global basis which you couldn't do just 15 years ago. You can do work virtually. Many companies have 20% or 30% of their workforce located outside of geographic centers. So they are no longer required to be sitting in a specific infrastructure to do the work because you can collaborate thanks to technology. So you have big changes that are helping companies build different work models and different people models. It also has effects around leadership and management. You hear a lot about the changes within middle management and how middle management is getting squeezed. If you think about middle management's traditional role, middle management's traditional role was to acquire knowledge over a long period of time and disseminate that knowledge throughout the organizations and the team they led. Today, access to knowledge is instantaneous. Knowledge is no longer the determinant of the ability to drive a team, but rather coaching and harnessing the power of that team is what middle management is all about, which means you need less middle management, and the role of middle management changes as well. So someone leaving the workforce from a traditional middle management role, trying to get back into the workforce in a new middle management role, has a very different job to do. And then let's talk a little bit about the primary area of interest, I believe, which I'm sure you've heard a lot about, which is this talent and skills mismatch. And this is a phenomenon that you have maybe heard a lot about also here, this debate and the paradigm in the United States about 3 million jobs are open and unfilled, yet 14 million people are unemployed. So how is this possible? And I'll come back to the United States in a brief moment, but I'll just address this on a global scale first. A big driver behind this for every developed country is demographic changes, an aging workforce and a population that is declining in size. Most European countries, as you can see from this chart, their populations are declining. Italy peaked about 5 years ago. Germany's population is declining. Japan's population started to decline about 15 years ago. What this means, an aging workforce has to be supported by fewer workers. And that is a big, that is a very difficult situation for a country to handle, as you don't have workers who are going to be productive contributors to economic growth. Productivity improvements will offset some of it. The changes that you see here are, however, of the size that is not going to be possible. This will require changes in pension legislation, immigration laws, and things of that nature. What you will also see, interestingly, is that you have this reduction, for instance, in a country like China. Most of you may know that China is the biggest country today, with India a close second at 1.3 versus 1.1 billion people. India's birth rate, because of its agrarian community and the way it's structured, will continue to rise and will probably be the biggest country in the world in the next 20 years, whereas China will peak and start declining. And that's the one-child policy that is having that effect on birth rates. The U.S. is one of the very few developed countries that does not have a demographic issue. The U.S. has that is creating a talent and skills mismatch is a lack of skilled workforce and issues around education with very high high school dropout rates, which is not fitting the demands of organizations of the future. And I'll come back to that in a moment. When we talk about Wisconsin, however, whilst we have a growing population forecast for many, many years coming out, we are also faced with an aging workforce, which is a difficult situation for us in Wisconsin because we have a disproportionately high part of our employment within manufacturing and within a kind of manufacturing, of course, also in the future, that requires higher skills. So this is an area that we as a state have to pay great attention to because our competitive possibilities in Wisconsin from a manufacturing perspective are actually very good. But we have to make sure that we have the talent that has the adequate skills to be able to fill the jobs of the future within those areas. And to illustrate some of this, some of these changes that are occurring, just think about the changes that are required for jobs that you would have thought, well, knowing what I know, what kind of skills do you know? And you can see a very rapid evolution in terms of the kinds of skills we were looking for 25 years ago, and for the same, ostensibly the same job. Fast forward 25 years, it's a much more complex role. It requires the ability for critical thinking, complex problem solving, in a role such as an administrative assistant. Why? More technology, do more with less, complexity of the work increases. There are less positions of this nature also at this time. So you are improving productivity. The same is true in a number of positions. We surveyed about 38,000 employers globally recently, and we do that once a year to ask them, what do they feel about finding the talent that they need so that they can grow their businesses. And in the U.S., despite having a very high unemployment rate, 52% of employers cited difficulties finding talent to match their needs. If you had the opportunity to listen to the National Association of Manufacturing yesterday, they released a report for manufacturers on a national survey in the U.S. published yesterday. 80% of manufacturers cite difficulties finding the right talent at the right time within manufacturing today. And here is the evolution that you see around this survey, and clearly a very strong dip during the recession, but a very rapid rebound. So the question, of course, could be, why is there such a rapid rebound? Companies have used the last 2.5 years during the recession to retool how they do things. They expect to do more with less. They change their manufacturing processes. They use more technology within manufacturing. They use more technology in the workplace at large. And they have improved productivity. And as you will have noted, during the recession, labor productivity actually stayed the same and improved, which is remarkable. So when it then takes off again, the kind of people that you need to do the work is very different from the ones that you had earlier. These are the top 10 jobs in that survey that companies cited as having difficulty in finding. And without going through the whole list, I think it's fair to say that many of these fall within the category of what you would call middle skills. So they are not the highest skilled people. They are skills that require experience and forms of education, be it certification or two-year colleges, many of which are occupations that have done with people who have experience over a long period of time but are retiring. So remember, every day in the U.S., 10,000 baby boomers turn 65 today and for the next 19 years. So that is the proportion of the workforce that is about to leave with experience and skills, which need to be replaced with at least the same, if not a higher, skill level as we go forward. And the reasons that employers cite for difficulties in finding those are really three types. They're organizational, so do I want to come into manufacturing? Do I believe manufacturing has a future in the United States? for instance, from a job seeker's perspective. They can be candidate specific. Do they have the right skills? The mix between hard skills and soft skills as they are trying to enter into the workforce to match the demands of the organizations that are looking to hire. And of course, also there are cyclical and environmental issues, which means demand in different geographies and in different industries will fluctuate. So those are all contributing factors, and we are seeing all of these occur actually right now here in the United States. So as we think about what we could do to strengthen our opportunities to attract and create jobs here in Wisconsin, we think there are a number of things that we as a state could and should focus on. One is to make sure that there is a very strong alignment between the real business needs of organizations in terms of the skills that are needed and the preparation of the kids that come through the educational system, so that there isn't a mismatch in terms of understanding the skills, the background, and the preparation to facilitate this transition. And I know that Bill, a little bit later on, will talk a lot about ways and examples, great examples, of where that is done elsewhere. Building a strength in industries, of course, that have a future. Some of them you look at things that relate to demographics. So healthcare, which is already a big component here in Wisconsin, of course. But also manufacturing. We believe manufacturing has a great future in America. The level of competitiveness that we illustrate compared even to some emerging markets for the kind of manufacturing that where we feel we can compete requires skilled talent, but it has a big, manufacturing has a tremendous advantage from many other industries, and it generates other jobs to the tune of maybe 1.7 jobs to every single manufacturing jobs, vendors, construction, all kinds of corollary jobs that get created because you have manufacturing. So manufacturing, we believe, would be very well served, as well as trying to cluster and focus on certain industries, such as you're seeing examples of here in Wisconsin already. Encourage establishment, of course, of and helping small businesses get off and grow. And last but not least, improve the outcome of K-12 education and make sure that we address the high school dropout rates, because high school dropout students who drop out of high school have a very low probability of finding gainful employment and contributing to our community's growth and the health of our nation. Addressing this is going to be one of the key factors as we look forward. Thank you.
How much did I run over? 2 minutes?
Oh, 30 seconds.
Perfect. I can stand.
I'd be happy to take questions here. And Karen told me I ran over by 30 seconds, so I am very excessively pleased, because this could have been running over by way, way, way more than that.
So we will have more time after our first three speakers for additional questions. So we have a few minutes for questions for Mr. Friesing. And as is our custom, we'll be giving priority to state legislators and the secretary's office and state agencies.
Yeah.
In the beginning of your presentation, you were talking about the differences between emerging and developing markets.
Yep.
And you were saying that the emerging markets are accelerating through all their phases, and they were much more able to navigate through the recession than the developed markets.
Yes.
Well,
there are a number of things that are happening in emerging markets. You have many of them are sitting on natural resources. They are still agrarian societies. They have access to minerals. They have access to things like that, soybeans, if you look at Argentina. So they have access to resources, or they have access to a rapidly emerging domestic market of consumers. So Brazil, as you know, is a 200 million population as a nation, and they have moved almost 40 million people from abject poverty to what they would call a sea level of income, which means although by our standards still very poor, they are now starting to consume and buy things, which means you have the emergence of a domestic market which then feeds local manufacturing. So they are creating the stability. They are going through the phases today that we went through after the Second World War and just before that. So they're going through exactly the same evolution, but at an accelerated rate. What I would say, though, which is very interesting, is whilst this development is very beneficial to the emerging markets, it is not without its challenges. So wage inflation in China for the people with skills, and we had talked earlier about the population of 1.2 billion people, roughly. It mustn't be forgotten that you have 750 million living the way they used to roughly in the 1930s in China. And there are 400 million that are starting to benefit from the economic boom. Wage inflation for those 400 million skilled workers is close to 20% a year. So the wage inflation is driving up the cost, which is why you are seeing some industries already anticipating this advantage I referred to earlier and are moving manufacturing back to the US. They're moving call centers back from India to the US.
Yay, exactly.
So they come back in a different way, though. What is coming back? It's not coming back as highly labor intensive. It comes back as highly skilled manufacturing work. It comes back as a virtual call center, not a 500 people center sitting somewhere in the desert of Arizona, but rather a 50-person call center and then distributed for another 500 people that work from their homes. So it comes back in a different way and requires a higher skill. But we are becoming more competitive because for the emerging markets to compete on a global market, they need talent that is able to compete on a global market. And whilst they have a lot of people, they don't have enough talent that is able to compete in global economies. That is why you're seeing a very rapid wage inflation. And that's also why you're seeing the social bifurcation based on skills occurring not only in developed countries, but also in emerging markets. Because those that have the skills create all the wealth and can compete in a global economy. But you have large portions of the population in both India and in China, as well as in Brazil, who absolutely are not participating in this wealth growth and have no prospects of doing so anytime in the near future. So those are the challenges. And this is not a... those are very significant challenges. And the aging population, the growth of the lifespan is 2 to 3 times what we had. So what took us, 10 years to increase the lifespan growth during the rapid acceleration, maybe by 2 years. They will jump to 5 years increase in lifespan in 10. So if you look at Bangladesh in 1983, a typical emerging market country, 6.1 children per couple in Bangladesh, birth rate today, 20 years later, is 2, which is a sea change. And their population is dropping, growth is dropping, which of course will help them grow until the point that they start declining, which is then when you get into the situation that we are in most developed countries, which is with a declining population, you're struggling to keep up economic growth because you don't have enough people to do this.
One more quick question. Wisconsin has typically invested in its education system, both K-12 as well as the higher education system. How would you assess our investment in terms of serving the needs of employers, and particularly our technical college system as well as our conventional 2 and 4 year campuses? If there are shortcomings, how would you recommend that we improve it?
Well, I'm not an education specialist, so I don't know that I would know enough about what exact policies we need to adopt. I have some ideas. However, I look at the outcome of our education system today, and I note that our high school dropout rates are unacceptably high. And I know that kids that leave school without a high school degree will have a much more difficult time coming into the workforce. So as we think about 9.1% unemployment in the United States, or 7.8% unemployment here in Wisconsin, we have to be clear that the average is absolutely meaningless. Higher skilled professions have a 4.7% unemployment rate. High school no high school degree workforce has an unemployment rate of 19%. So the gap is massive. The average turns out to be 9. Youth unemployment is 20% on the average. So we are not preparing our kids for a successful future in our education systems today. We are training them in skills and providing an academic background which is not suitable for success for the jobs that exist today, as evidenced by the fact that employers are having difficulties finding the right skills. And I know that in Wisconsin, you've heard, I'm sure many of you, talking about the difficulty in finding welders, the difficulty in finding trained machinists, the difficulties in finding operators. Now, some of that belongs to the category of, okay, I don't really like manufacturing because I have a perceived idea about what this is like. But by and large, I think if you talk to employers, they will say, I'm concerned about finding people. I have jobs, but you know, I'm not getting enough people. There are companies in our state that are taking this into their own hands and are working with schools directly, going into high school classes, saying, guys, stay in school, then get a two-year degree or a certificate, a professional certification, and if you do that here in Eau Claire, I will find you a job in my company. So you have that, but you also have this very high level of dropout rates. So the one is those that stay in need to be better prepared and better aligned with the needs. But the biggest area, which I am the most concerned about as a member of this community, is the high school dropout rates. Because that is only going to accelerate the bifurcation of those that have and those that have not. And it's already a trend that's been going on for 10 years, and we need to turn that to make sure that we get our students to complete and get them to continue. And I know that Bill, our next speaker, will talk a lot about what exactly can be done to address this issue. But it is, I think, from a strategic perspective, from a country perspective, probably the most important part. Clearly, we need to navigate debt, and clearly we need to navigate competition in other areas. But I'm extremely optimistic from those perspectives. But this is what's going to build the asset and the competitive future of our nation, as well as the companies that operate here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.